So tell me how it's been. Like, what's going on in your world?
This is different, bro. I feel like every time I stop in the morning and I have to stop what I'm doing and I have to pray, and I'm noticing that my prayers are totally different. Every single word in the prayer matters all of a sudden. It's not just throwing something up in the air because it's routine or it sounds good. I literally have to stop and think about every single word, and I freak out. Although I'm scared, like, in a whole nother level, this is the deepest I've ever trusted God. Bro, I mean, you've seen...
It's like a little peanut, right?
I had to laminate that. So
it's crazy. It's upside down, but it's crazy. There
and so
go.
Every time I look at that in the morning, I realize more than ever I have no control over that little peanut that is growing inside of Monique. And I want it. I want control. I want to be able to ensure her safety. I want to be able to ensure that this baby will grow. But we're at the front lines of ministry, right? Like, where we've seen reality hit.
And it's scary, huh?
It's scary. And that's where I don't want to be gripped by fear, but I am. And that's where I'm at.
Being married and being a father of four children, I have a 23-year-old, an 18-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 4-year-old. My plate is full, and there's a broad range of emotions and personalities that we have to learn to deal with differently. My oldest daughter and I, there was a time when she didn't really like me very well early on. We just didn't click. But something happened as I began to understand what it meant to love our children as Christ loves us. And I would begin to spend more time with her. I'd begin to read the word with her. I'd begin to pray with her, even when she didn't want to. I'd begin to get up in the morning and make hot chocolate for her, even when she didn't drink it. Just little things like that begin to play out. And little by little, she began to trust me and who I was as a father to her. A lot of time, culture tells us that we can't show emotion because that's weakness. And I tell you, to be a loving husband and to be a loving father, you have to make room to show vulnerability. Those are the things that they look at, I believe, to see how they're going to handle with their pain, their struggles in life, especially with daughters. Being sensitive to their emotional needs, not only being the provider for their physical needs, but being there for them emotionally, learning to listen more, and paying attention as they're talking to you. Those are some things that I've learned over the years that deeply increase intimacy between a daughter and a father.
You think of all the people who are so eager to find their husband and find their wife and, you know, what it's going to be like to start a family. And it doesn't start the day that you get pregnant. It doesn't start the day you ask somebody to be your girlfriend or ask them to get married to you or even at the altar. It's understanding and becoming that person in the moment that you're sitting in.
Instead of finding the right one, you become the right one for somebody else.
Right, of course.
And that starts with surrendering back.
You know, understand who you are in light of God's work. You know, you are a part of it. So you've been adopted into his family. And
not because of anything
no,
that they could do.
No, I mean, look at bravery, dude. The kid, like, takes a dump and cries and, like, and the kid does nothing for us, but brings us insane joy just being a part of our everyday lives. I hope that is bravery's reality, is that I love the Lord so much without reason for what I'm getting because of it. They just naturally, I think of like Ricky and Elisha. He just loves that kid so much. And naturally, because of the love that Ricky displays for his wife and for E, I mean, E is, he wants nothing but an incredible relationship with Jesus because of the way he's displayed it.
I grew up in a home that was real violent. There was a lot of anger in my home. My dad was an angry dude. He had a lot of pressure at work, and he came home and he would take it out on his family. And that was a cycle that I saw in my grandfather. And that was, I guess I was in line to also receive that. That was what I was gonna inherit. you know, from my generation, I was going to carry that anger and be violent. But when I was 19, the Lord, I got saved, and the Lord began to do a work in my life. But I remember it wasn't just over like that. In fact, even right after I got saved, I came back from Bible college for a year and literally had a shoving match where I had my dad by the shirt tails in the garage, and veins popping out of my neck, and I'm shouting at him, "You need Jesus, you need Jesus." And I realized that was actually probably not the best route to go with him in evangelism, but it was also just an indication that just because I was saved, I still had this battle with anger and this emotion that I had to get under control. All I wanted was for my dad to say, "I'm sorry, you know, for the way that he behaved and acted." And I think I had enough grace and forgiveness, and I recognize everybody's kind of screwed up, so I could probably forgive him. And that's one thing that I determined going into this fatherhood thing that I was going to do, whether, you know, however hard it was, if it killed me, I was going to apologize to my son. And there's been times ever since he was little that I've had to truly apologize for my behavior, things I've said and done. And there's been times when I've just grabbed him and literally looked into his eyes and say, you know, "I'm sorry that I'm not perfect. I make mistakes, but yet that's not an excuse for me treating you the way I did. That was not appropriate." And there's been times just with tears that he said, "You know, I forgive you," and embraces that. And even that ability to do that is even though as difficult as it is, it really shapes him, and it's molding him into being the man of God that he needs to be. And so for him to own his garbage and to apologize and not make excuses, that's very typical of our son. And it's because he's seeing it modeled in me. And I know that he is a shadow of me. He's watching every move I make, and he's doing the things I do. I'm telling you, if you can be a man and humble yourself to that extent where you're apologizing to your kids, your wife, the people that are around you when you made mistakes, that respect that they have for you will increase. And so I know a lot of you feel like maybe you're in a real hopeless scenario where you're just bound and determined to repeat the cycle of abuse that you found yourself in your family. And the Lord can have victory in your life. He has victory in my life. So fight back. Fight that battle. And that was really what I had to do to come against that generational curse of anger, of violence that I found myself in.
Looking at Bravery, he's 3 months old right now. And when I look at him, I'm blown away. He's growing, dude. He's like, his thighs were like skinny chicken legs, and now they're all fat and plumpy, and his smile is all filled out, and he's got his mom's cheeks. I look back on me being a kid and my brothers being a kid, because I'm the oldest of three, you know, and I know it's going to get complicated, you know. I know that there's going to be differences between my opinion and Bravery's opinion, and then he's going to be like, "You're my dad, so you're stupid." You know, like, there's going to be a clash there eventually, and you think that, like, "I gotta change the diaper, there's poop all over the place, poop on the wall, whatever." Like, he's like, if you just think about the fact that, like, you're not gonna change your baby's diapers forever. Like, and so every time, like, that's one less diaper you're gonna change, because eventually your kid's not gonna wanna be held. He's not gonna want, you know, anything, you know, in the worst case, he's not gonna want you to display this affection for him, you know? And so, like, right now, it's like, that time is so critical. I want to store it up like a memory bank, or like a photo album, or like a video, you know. I want that to be like my reel when things get tough. I want to look back on that and go, like, this, every moment is worth savoring. Every single moment with this little kid is worth savoring.
You know, for me, in my life, in this time in my life where I'm at, my time with my sons is special. And so when I am around him, when I do see him, when I do talk to him, I want those to be special times. I don't want those to be times of conflict. One of the difficult things is acknowledging that your sons and daughters aren't yours, they're God's. And God gave your sons and daughters to you. And now that they're adults or are getting ready to move out into the world and become adults, they're gonna make mistakes. My oldest son, he came to me at the age of 19 with a drug addiction, and shared with me that he was addicted to methamphetamine. And that began a process with my family of taking him through a process of getting him help. And in that, over that process is when my family came to the Lord. And my oldest son was away from the family, and he was in Louisiana in a recovery facility. And he was there for a few years. And the phone calls that he would make home to me, asking me if he could come home to tell my son, no, you can't come home, you're not ready, was a very hard thing. And to stay strong in doing that while I'm talking to him on the phone, and then hanging up the phone and going somewhere and bawling, crying out, asking God to heal him, was painful. But the one thing that it did do is it helped my son to grow. It restored him. And it made him have and want a desire to come back home, but to come back home right. That's one of the hardest things as a parent that I've ever had to do, because I love my sons.
I have these fearful thoughts of, what if this baby doesn't come to full term? Yeah, that scared me a lot. And it's one of those things that I don't want to talk about with Monique, and I know that she doesn't necessarily want to talk about it with me, but we've voiced that in our prayers.
You're talking about not having any control before you know your baby. Can you imagine, like, you actually see his face, and you can, like, you can initiate and engage a smile eye to eye with your son, knowing that there's still so much out of your control?
No idea that our son kind of falling off a sink. He hit his side, and we took him to the emergency. We had no idea that that would lead to kind of this 3-year journey of dealing with leukemia. So the initial diagnosis was like, this is going to be a long process. And then we found out a month ago that he has a bizarre chromosome that actually takes our treatment from being just a low standard risk to very high risk. Trying to figure out how to navigate that as a husband, trying to figure out how to be a good dad, has been an incredibly humbling experience for me. And I just have not figured it out. Dads are supposed to have all the answers, right? Like, dads are supposed to be fixers. And when stuff goes wrong and it doesn't work out the way it's supposed to, I'm supposed to come in and fix it, and I just can't fix it. So I'm learning to be a dad that doesn't have the answers. And I think just approaching God, going, I don't know what to do here. I don't, but you do. And so I submit to your counsel. I submit to what you would have for me in this moment, in spite of wanting to fix, and wanting to know, and wanting to do the right thing and make the right choice and have confident children and kids that don't cry and kids that don't get picked on at school and all the different things that go along with having a kid with leukemia. Trying to encourage my little one, who's 8 years old, who's in the hospital and frustrated because he feels great, but yet his body is getting pumped with chemicals and a little fever. I mean, we were just in the hospital for 5 days because of a fever, a little fever. Like, how do you explain to your child that God is good in the midst of that? How do you love your wife and comfort her in a way? I have not figured that out. I'm not gonna say the right things. I'm not gonna comfort them in the right ways. I'm not gonna do all the right things, and that's okay, because if I can learn to calm and to be still and to know that He is God and find confidence in that, everything kind of flows out of that. You know, I think simply as a dad, it's coming to understand that relationship with him as my spiritual father, and that I'm the son. And then in the midst of that, I'm being parented by the Father so that I can parent my kids, so that I can love them the way that I'm being loved by the Father. And if at any point I think that I can kind of go a different way or figure out a different path, it always goes bad. So I think it's just learning to be a son to the Father so that I can be a father to my sons.
I love being a dad. I love it. And the thing about being a dad and the advice that I got early on before I was a dad, which I would also impart to all of you, you know, young men who are pursuing being a dad or one day you'll be a dad. I will tell you this, be present, be in the life of your child, be involved in what they're involved in. Elisha is passionate about baseball, so I become passionate about baseball. Would I have ever watched a baseball game on TV prior to my son being passionate about the game? Probably not. But it just doesn't matter. It's about you pouring into this young human who you're shaping and you're molding, who's watching your every step. If you have a daughter, dance with your daughter. It doesn't matter if you know how to dance. She'll laugh and giggle at you, but you're dancing with her. You're giving her your attention. And if you haven't been up till now, it's not too late. Jump in there. Find out what they like. Ask them questions. Kids are smarter than we give them credit for. Pour into them. Pour into them. Be present in your kids' life.
To the fathers who have teenage sons and daughters, I want to encourage you. Prepare them in a manner that when they do leave, that they have a relationship with God to lean on. You must yield them up to the Lord. And at that point, your responsibility is to pray for them and to let them know that you're proud of them. Tell them you love them.
If you don't disciple your children, somebody else is going to. Somebody else will. And I took that extremely personal. You know, and it's one of those things where we're out, we're serving, we're loving on people, we're loving people through things. But the hardest people to do that with is our own family. We extend so much grace to everybody else, but as soon as something jumps off in our family, we're like, well, you're not supposed to feel that way. What are you doing? You know, you jump into the solution right away. What are you doing? You know, and that's one thing that God continues to remind me, is that my family is my first ministry, because that will set the tone for anything else that I do.
I just think for dads to stop trying so hard and really just fall in love with your Heavenly Father, that could be the most complete, wonderful thing that you do as a dad, that could be the best leadership you cause for your whole family. But when we come into this relationship with Him, that we find everything that we're looking for. And so I just can't encourage you enough to become a son and a daughter of the Most High who parents you perfectly. And you really, truly will find what it is you're looking for.